Chapter 36, 3rd of July. Time doesn't heal or make it any better, just makes it different. Time provides distractions that fill the void and numb the pain. I knew something was up from the moment Ian fell into my bedroom. He didn't bother knocking, just tumbled through the doorframe, phone in hand and a flurry of apologies spilling out of his mouth. "Oh God, I'm so sorry." He didn't leave any time for me to respond. "This probably isn't the best way to tell you, but I don't want you to find out any other way. I'm so sorry." Concluding with, "Please don't freak out. It's all going to be okay, I promise." Freak out was an odd phrase to use. Breakdown, spiral, crash and burn, throw yourself out of the window. Any of those would have made more sense. Glaring back at me, on full brightness, was a blurry but still very clear photo of Oliver kissing me. I felt vomit crawl to the top of my throat as I reimagined the sensation of his hands slithering over my skin, the taste of his beer-soaked lips forced against mine. "When the boyfriend's away, Melissa will play." The headline was horrendous. The article was even worse. Felt my eyes sting as they filled with tears. I hadn't blinked for minutes as I scanned the ever-worsening tabloid. "An insider source has told us Hart's new girlfriend, Melissa Bishop, is already straying from her boyfriend while he's away. Jack Hart is currently in Brazil on the press tour for the upcoming season of Violins in Vienna. Meanwhile, Bishop is kissing her ex, Oliver Montgomery. Taken last night in..." "They've got Oliver's name down here," I spluttered. "How do they know who Oliver is?" "I don't know." Ian's bottom lip wobbled. He crawled into bed with me and wrapped an arm around my shoulders. "Oh, babe, I honestly don't know." "Oh my God." I scrambled for my phone, throwing Ian off me. I didn't want to be comforted right now. I certainly didn't want to be touched. What if Jack's seen this? As I reached for my phone, it started to ring. Withheld number. That meant Jack. I answered, "God, what must he be thinking?" A woman's voice rendered me silent.
"Miss Bishop? Hello? Is this Miss Melissa Bishop?"
If this is my dentist ringing up to change my appointment, I'm going to throw myself in front of a bus. Yeah?
"My name's Hannah. I'm one of the nurses here at Whittington Hospital. We've currently got Arthur West in our care and we're going to need you to come down."
Arthur? Jack's granddad? Why the hell are they ringing me about Arthur? Ian was staring at me dumbly, unaware he wasn't the only one clueless as to what the hell was going on.
"I think you've got the wrong number. We have a Melissa Bishop down as Arthur's secondary emergency contact."
"That's me, but I..."
"Well, I'm sorry to have to inform you, but Mr. West's taken a poor turn. The district nurses checked on him this afternoon and found him unresponsive. We've brought him in and it doesn't look like he's going to recover from this, Miss Bishop."
First for a supposed heart attack, and again for a real heart attack and a minor stroke. "I've got a bingo card," she told me during her second admission. "Trying to get all the mega medical problems stamped before I kick the bucket. I've got cancer, heart attack, stroke, anaphylactic shock. I'm just waiting on pneumonia and then I can shout bingo and die happy." "Don't make jokes," I'd warned her, sitting by her bedside. "It's not funny." Mum pulled a face at me, then took my hand and squeezed it. "When I go, Mel, I want to go out laughing." The nurse on reception escorted me to Arthur. I found him in a dimly lit room wired up to a million different machines. Tubes were hooked up to his wrist, nose, and several disappeared under his bedsheet. He looked nothing like he had the last time I'd seen him. There was no representation of a jolly, well-trimmed, slimmer version of Santa Claus here. Arthur's face had become gaunt, his beard slightly wild, his jaw slack and hanging unnaturally. His breathing was deep, irregular and loud. It was almost as if he was reaching, every time, for his last breath. I sat silently in the chair beside him and gingerly took his hand. There was near to no warmth in his skin. His wrist was heavy and limp in my hand. I squeezed it, doubtful if he even knew I was there. Why was I here? I'd left in such a rush, Ian too busy trying to talk to me about that bastard article to notice I'd moved on. This was a perfectly timed distraction from having to think about it. No, Arthur wasn't my granddad. He wasn't even someone I knew, but...
If he does die while I'm out there, he's going to be completely on his own.
Jack had said those words with such pain in his voice. He'd made it clear one of his biggest fears was the prospect of Arthur dying with no one beside him. That was a fear I never had for my mum, as Dad never left her side. But that didn't mean I didn't understand it. Because in the end, when it came down to that fateful moment, Dad wasn't in the room. He'd stepped out to make a brew. So, in the end, it was just me and Mum. And I'm glad it happened that way. I don't know how Dad would have coped if he'd been in my shoes watching Mum take her last breath. Wasn't magical, or spiritual, or funny, like I'd hoped it would be. It was traumatic, and scarring, and if I'm honest with myself, I've never gotten over it. Nobody and nothing prepares you for it. For how quick they turn cold. How fast they solidify and how much their face distorts. As their eyes glaze over and their jaw slackens to a point where their bottom teeth look as if they're about to fall out. That was the final image I got of my mum. As brutal as it was, I wouldn't change it for the world because it meant she hadn't been on her own. And I wasn't prepared to let Arthur be on his own either. "It's Melissa, sir," I whispered, reminding myself I was here for Jack and Arthur's sake, not mine. "Jack's friend? I've just come to sit with you for a little while. Is that okay?" There was no response. Just endless, empty silence and then a strained, raspy gasp for air. "I'm sorry if I'm intruding," I began, not really knowing why I was talking at all. I think because I was nervous. Terrified I was making a huge mistake and taking one massive, insensitive step in the wrong direction. "Just thought you might want some company while you wait." Wait for what? I thought. For death to appear with a big scythe? Or one of God's angels with a get into heaven card? Or nothing. I had no idea what this man believed in. A nurse came in, a student scuttling behind him. "Oh. Hello," he said, straightened. "We didn't know you were in here. I'm so sorry." I shook my head, still holding Arthur's limp hand tightly. "It's fine. I don't mind." The nurse smiled sympathetically and looked over Arthur's notes, the student barely making eye contact. The lack of conversation made me very aware of how dire Arthur's condition was. They were clearly under instruction not to speak unless spoken to. "Have you had any luck getting in contact with his next of kin?" I finally asked, unable to take the nagging in my head or the uncomfortable silence any longer. The nurse gave me a quizzical look. "You're Mr. West's next of kin, aren't you?" I shook my head. "The woman on the phone said I was second or something? I don't even know what that means." After a short whisper in her ear, the student hurried out of the room. The nurse stood flicking through more of Arthur's notes. "We've got all your information here. Melissa Bishop. For status, they've written... visiting?" There was a literal scratch of the head. "Visiting? Why the hell have they written visiting?" Then it hit me. The form I'd been handed the last time I'd come to see Arthur. It wasn't a visiting questionnaire at all. It was a contact sheet. "What's your relationship to the patient?" "Granddaughter?" I lied, panicking that if I gave the truthful answer, they'd throw me out. The nurse scribbled across the paper, just as the student came back into the room.
"They can't get past the first ring,"
she squeaked, still not making eye contact with me.
"Reception can keep trying, but it keeps going straight to voicemail."
"Okay," I trailed off. "Thank you." They both left. The room returned to its eerie, unnatural silence. I wanted to speak to Arthur, bring him words of comfort, but I had nothing. I was drawing up a complete and utter blank, second-guessing whether I should have come at all.
Chapter 37, 4th of July. Some friends are like flies. They only hang around when there's shit going on. Mum was transferred to a hospice when she got too ill to be in the hospital. She didn't want to be there, she wanted to be at home. I tried to visit every day with Dad, but we found she got overwhelmed when both of us arrived. So, we decided to go separately. With Dad, Mum was positive, upbeat, adamant she was going to be a medical marvel, and she would be back and fighting fit in no time. With me, she was slightly more realistic. "Don't let anybody come to my funeral that I wouldn't want there," she said, staring out of the hospice window. "I'd rather the crematorium be empty than filled with people I don't like and I know don't like me." "It won't be empty," I reassured. "I'm definitely going, and Dad's RSVP'd as a maybe." Mum laughed. It swiftly mutated into uncontrollable coughs. She held a tissue close to her mouth, letting it be speckled with blood. "Your jokes are going to kill me one day," she croaked. Her eyes crinkled at the corners as she smiled, but they all swiftly vanished when she noticed I was silently crying. "What's wrong?" she asked dumbly. I just don't think I'm ready. The world isn't going to be a world I recognise when you, Mum's eyebrows furrowed. "This is one of your things, isn't it? That because I'm in it, the world is a certain way. And it's going to go poof, because I'm not." I felt myself start to sob. A timid, "yeah," fluttered out of my mouth. It was true. The world was going to completely change the moment my mum left it. And I had never gone a single day without her. She was my everything. She had grown me, raised me, helped me, and was now leaving me, unequipped to spend the rest of my life without her. Mum smiled at me sympathetically and let out a half-bemused laugh. "I'm not that special, actually, to tilt the world on its axis." "Mum," I assured her sternly, "you really are. You are to me." She laughed weakly, flattered at the sentiment but still not acknowledging that I meant every word. My world was going to end with her death. I just knew it. "You'll be fine, Mel. I know you will." "And what if I'm not?" I awoke to something worse than nothingness. Complete and utter nothingness, thrown in with near enough pitch blackness and a hand clutching mine that wasn't my mum's. Arthur's eyes were the only thing glistening in the dark, wide and staring at the ceiling. My heart fell right to the pit of my stomach. I searched for the nurse's button and pressed it as hard as I could, never letting go of Arthur's hand. No one came. Arthur's eyes flickered my way, his head frozen solid into his pillow. He made a groan that I could have sworn sounded like, "Josie." I swallowed. Arthur gripped harder onto my hand, it no doubt taking every last ounce of strength he had left. My heart broke for him. He really thought, in his final moments, I was his daughter. His hand then went limp, and I could see the shine in his eyes begin to drain away. Nurses came flurrying in, seconds too late. Not that there was anything they could have done. Reality seemed to blur as they flocked around me, going about their work, doing what needed to be done. The only one who approached me was the student nurse from before. She took my hand, sat beside me, and smiled as sympathetically as she could. I hadn't realised it, but I was crying, silently sobbing for a man I didn't even know.
The student nurse hadn't really left my side since they'd quietly whisked Arthur away and off the ward. As she handed me a scalding cup of tea in a tiny plastic cup, she said,
"I'm sorry for your loss."
"Wasn't my loss," I wanted to tell her. I hadn't lost anything. Jack had, and he didn't even know it. She finally left me when Amara called. We exchanged a few words. I explained, "Yes, I was at the hospital. Yes, I was okay. No, there was nothing I needed."
"Does Jack know?"
she asked. "No. Jack was no doubt still living in ignorant bliss, thousands of miles away on a white, sandy Brazilian beach, reading about my alleged affair with Oliver. No, they've tried to call him, but Jack's phone keeps..." As if the universe was playing some cruel trick, my words had seemingly summoned the man himself. Jack came bolting through the ward doors on the other end of the corridor, a platinum blonde woman following sluggishly behind. "Can I call you back?" I whispered.
"Why? Is everything okay?"
"Yeah," I lied. "Jack's here." I hung up before Amara had a chance to respond and withdrew into the back of my chair, wanting to blend in with the wall as much as possible. "We're here to see Arthur West," Jack said, approaching the reception desk. His voice was a little panicked. He looked drained and defeated. "I tried ringing him yesterday, but there was no answer, so I rang here and they said he was on this ward. Is he okay?" Jesus Christ. Could he see me? Did I want him to see me? It's not like I could head for the exit. Jack was right by the door. Despite being on the third floor, the window looked appealing.
"Could you repeat the name of the person you're here to see, please?"
The woman beside him leaned across the desk, readjusting the garish handbag on her shoulder.
"For God's sake! He started with that. Arthur West, I tell you, you lot are bloody hopeless."
"Don't start, Mum,"
Jack snapped before apologising on her behalf. The now scowling receptionist went back to tapping away on her computer before her face completely changed. Her scowl faded away and she looked up at Jack, sympathetically.
"If you just give me a moment to grab one of the doctors, I'll be right back."
As soon as she was gone, Jack's mum groaned loudly into her hands.
"This is such a waste of time, Jacko," she grumbled. "The geezer isn't even going to know who I am."
"He's got cancer, Mum, not dementia."
Jack rolled his eyes and I tried desperately to stay out of his line of sight. I decided he didn't need to know I was here. It would only make everything worse. A doctor I didn't recognise came round the corner, the receptionist on her heels. The doctor extended her hand towards Jack, introducing herself as Dr. Shaw.
"Jack Hart,"
he replied, taking her hand and shaking it slowly.
"I'm Josie West. Not that anybody seems to care,"
Jack's mum chimed in.
"We've been trying to get a hold of you," Shaw continued unfazed.
Jack pulled out his phone.
"Sorry, I've had to use a different number while I've been away. It completely slipped my mind to let you know as I was speaking to Grandad Morstairs anyway. How's he doing?"
"I shouldn't be here," I internally screamed, feeling trapped by the scalding cup of tea in my hands and Jack blocking my exit route. Then it occurred to me. This Shaw was about to tell them Arthur had died, but she wouldn't do it here. No, she would take them into a side room and let them down easy. So all I have to do is stay as still as possible until they're whisked off and then bolt for the door. Not a solid plan, but the best one I'd got.
"I'm sorry to inform you both, but Arthur passed away this morning."
"Well, that's that plan fucked."
I could feel the atmosphere of the whole corridor thicken. Jack's mum let out a half laugh, half blub of horror.
"You're joking,"
she said, trying desperately to make light of what would be a very sick joke.
Tell me you're kidding. He was fine the other day. Jacko, you said he was fine.
There was no response from Jack. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see his whole body had gone stiff, his eyes fixed on Shaw. We've moved them downstairs, if you would still like to see him. I can have one of the nurses escort you down and answer any questions you have.
Downstairs?
Jack's mum's eyes widened.
As in the morgue? You want me to go in a basement full of dead people? Are you mad?
The doctor took a notably deep breath. I know this is very difficult news for you, Miss West. We will try and make you as comfortable as possible. We'll be able to place him in a side room.
No,
she yelped.
No, absolutely not. Not happening.
Shaw gave the receptionist a brief sideways glance before turning her attention to Jack, who was still frozen to the spot. I wanted to jump out of my chair, run and hug him. Hold him. Tell him everything was going to be all right, despite the fact I knew the world as he knew it was currently imploding.
Was he?
Jack whispered under his breath, slowly trying to find his voice.
Was Grandad on his own when it happened? Or was a nurse with him or something?
I believe his granddaughter was with him. My stomach felt like it was going to drop out of my arse. Jack's mum let out a bitter laugh.
Well, now I know you're having a son. A granddaughter? He doesn't have one. Two grandsons only, Doc.
She was his secondary emergency contact. We have her on file.
Definitely time to exit via the window, I thought, placing my tea under the chair and grabbing my coat, getting ready to run. Oh, yeah?
Jack's mum laughed again.
What's her name?
The receptionist, who'd returned to her desk, began typing away.
We have a, Melissa Bishop?
I wanted the ground to swallow me up. Jack's mum scoffed.
Never heard of her.
Jack suddenly began scrambling for his phone, patting down his coat and trouser pockets.
She was here.
Oh, you know her, do you? Got a sister I don't know about.
Jack's mum rolled her eyes.
I gave birth a third time and have just happened to forget, did I? What sick joke are you all trying to play on me today?
Jack held his phone to his ear and my heart stopped as the ringtone from my pocket began to echo down the corridor. I saw Jack's eyes glaring at me from around Shaw, his face unreadable. He hung up and began charging towards me. I felt like a red flag being waved in front of a rabid bull.
What the hell are you doing here?
He growled. From the rage behind his eyes, I could instantly tell Jack had seen and read the article. The fury in his voice wasn't just heightened due to Arthur. This was personal. I jumped up, hands out in surrender. Jack, I'm so sorry. I began, with no idea what I could say to justify any of this. What did he think of me? What could I have possibly said to make any of this better? I couldn't bring up Oliver and explain. I couldn't bring up Arthur and apologise. I just needed to get out of there and fast. They called me and I didn't think. I'm so sorry and I had no right to be.
No, you didn't,
he snapped, his mum now approaching from behind.
Ah, oh, is this the daughter I don't know about?
She's no one,
Jack hissed over his shoulder. I felt my eyes burn. No one. I'm no one. You said you were afraid he'd be on his own while you were away. I was just... I breathed. I was just trying to help. I began walking, then running for the exit. No one followed me. Thank God. Ian could do nothing but hold me as I sobbed. Amara was lurking by the kitchen door, biting her nails.
God, you ain't half had a ride of it,
Ian tried to joke. No one laughed.
I haven't had this much trouble with a bloke since I was at uni and were dating that Eunice fella.
Ian, will you just knock it on the head?
Amara snapped before turning back at me.
I'll whack the kettle on.
Ian audibly scoffed.
God, she's had her knickers in a right twist since you got home.
He began to stroke my head. Whether he was trying to be comforting or just bothered by my frizz itching his face, I wasn't sure.
I don't know why she's the one who's worked up. I'm the one who's been left in the dark all morning. At least she was getting regular updates.
What are you chatting about? I blubbed, pulling away from him.
We only spoke for about 2 seconds this morning. She's been as much in the dark as you have.
I reached for a tissue and dabbed my red raw face. Ian was now scowling at me.
I know she's your preferred friend, Mel. You don't have to lie to me.
I couldn't help but let out an exhausted laugh. Now was so not the time for Ian to start waffling about his friendship insecurities.
I'm not lying,
I reassured him, cupping his face and letting out another weak sob. Despite him being a terrible housemate sometimes and touch-and-go friend, I did love him. Amara returned, balancing 3 cups of tea on a wooden chopping board.
You're out of sugar.
Who've you been on the phone with all morning?
Ian asked sharply. Amara blanked.
What?
I ignored them both and curled up on the sofa, grabbing a blanket. I felt too sorry for myself to deal with their petty arguments and weird disagreements right now. I felt sure neither of them would have noticed if I just slipped upstairs and cried for the next 24 hours.
This morning, you said you were on the phone with Mel the whole time, but she's now saying it was 2 seconds max. So which is it?
Why does it matter? I asked, only then noticing Amara's jaw was clenched and she was visibly shaking. Ian rose off the sofa, towering over Amara.
Because she's done nothing but talk about Jack and his granddad this morning. So if she weren't talking to you about it, who were she talking to?
Amara looked like a rabbit caught in the headlights. A sick feeling began to bubble in the pit of my stomach. I swallowed hard. Amara? It was like time suddenly slowed as she looked me dead in the face, her eyes filled with fear. In those milliseconds, I began to notice everything I hadn't before. I'd been so caught up in my own crappy circle of chaos, I hadn't noticed the new nails, new phone and case, the haircut, the eyelash extensions, everything new. I pulled out my phone and scrolled the internet looking for the article of Oliver and me. I found it, the photo bringing vomit to my mouth. The angle of the camera, the position the photographer must have been in to get that shot. They would have had to have been standing at the bar, right where Amara had been. Insider source. The two words leapt out at me and I felt myself burning up. You did this. I spun my phone around.
Mel, I can explain.
You did this, I screamed. All the pieces started to come together like some twisted puzzle. This isn't the first time, is it? The photographer's outside Jack's house. You were the only person who knew I was there. Oh, God. Have you sent these reporters to the hospital? Amara's silence and trembling bottom lip confirmed what I'd hoped she would deny. He's just lost his granddad. How can you be so heartless? Ian couldn't stand any longer, his jaw agape. He fell back onto the sofa, meanwhile Amara was running her fingers through her freshly cut and coloured hair.
You have no idea what it's like, Mel.
She sucked her teeth and glared at me.
I don't come from a rich family like you. You claim you're broke, but you've got your daddy in a villa ready to cover any rent payment that may have been missed. You have money, whether it's directly in your account or not. I don't. No one in my family does. If I miss a payment, I'm out. Sofa surfing. Living with nothing and no one to help me.
They offered me thousands, Mel. More and more every time. I couldn't say no. I didn't have a choice. It isn't because I don't love you. It isn't because I don't care. It was because it was the smart thing to do. She snapped. A few pictures. A few bits of information about a guy you're always saying doesn't care about you. So it doesn't matter. None of it matters. Especially when the next day's clickbait comes out and everyone's moved on to the next load of tripe gossip. You've got a thick skin. I knew it wouldn't even affect you, and Jack's probably used to this by now.
I had no words. No response. Nothing. Ian, however, immediately launched for her.
Are you kidding me?
He screamed, almost lunging across the coffee table.
Do you hear yourself, Ma?
I like a good bit of gossip between friends, but I would never, ever sell out my friend's private life, no matter what they were offering.
5,000 quid, Ian, Amara snarled. That pays for my rent for 6 months.
And loses you your best friends, Ian pointed at the door. Get the fuck out now.
Mel,
Amara turned her attention back to me.
You have to at least see where I'm coming from.
I did see where she was coming from. I truly did.
I said get out.
I wasn't talking to you, Ian.
Amara swept up my hands in hers, her eyes pleading and desperate. I'd never seen her like this.
Mel, you can take a cut if that makes you feel better about it. Hell, have Oliver's cut, he'll understand.
My breath hitched, my vision starting to blur. Wait, what?
He's proper pissed at me because I need him, but I told him he took it too far. He was only supposed to kiss you for a split.
You planned for Oliver to attack me?
No, I...
Amara blinked, thinking back, realising what she'd let slip.
We just thought...
Jack had warned me about this. Thinking about it now, it's almost like he prophesied it. It's always the people that you least expect. Who stab you in the back, the fastest and the deepest. I pulled my hands free from Amara's grasp, slowly. You heard what Ian said, I hissed. Get out.
Chapter 38, 5th of July.
Just because you want it more than anything doesn't mean it's yours. Auditions are a prime example of that. Doesn't matter how talented you are or how famous you get, some roles are just not meant to be. Sleep had almost become like a foreign concept. I spent most, if not all, of the night refreshing an internet search of Jack's name, waiting for the inevitable publication. Surprisingly, it never came. Ian had turned feral. He was more distraught by Amara's betrayal than I was. I think that's because I was still somewhat in shock. Ian had fully accepted what Amara had done and begun his rage rampage over it. I was still waiting for one of them to tell me it was all just a prank. Ian was reigning Mr. Blabbermouth, it's true, but he was harmless. What Amara had done, her justifications aside, had broken me. I checked my phone. 3:26 a.m. I clambered out of bed and pulled on my nearest coat and trainers, all the while thinking, now is as good a time as any, and probably the best chance I've got. The deep hum of the taxi driving off eventually dimmed, leaving me in complete silence, staring up at Jack's front door. I approached, knowing this was the wrong thing to do, but aware this was the only option I had. I rang the doorbell and waited. In my head, I imagined Jack to be fast asleep in his bed, but surprisingly, that wasn't the case at all. A very dishevelled and confused Jack peered around the doorframe after only a minute or two.
Mel?
He croaked.
What the hell are you doing here?
He opened the door fully, revealing he was still wearing the same clothes I'd seen him in at the hospital. I need to talk to you. My voice trembled.
Do you know what time it is?
It's important, I breathed. After a moment of heightened tension between us, he reluctantly opened the door and let me over the threshold. In the kitchen, I saw Jack had an array of paperwork strewn across the breakfast table. Stacks of old photographs, newspaper articles, vintage theatre programmes.
You'll have to keep it quiet and make it quick. My mum's asleep in the room above us.
Jack said, his eyes notably glancing at the ceiling. He leaned against the counter furthest away from me and folded his arms across his chest.
So, what is it?
I stalled. I wasn't sure where I was even supposed to begin. A few things, really. Firstly, I wanted to apologise for being at the hospital yesterday. Jack's eyes narrowed. Honestly, I wasn't thinking. The hospital called saying they couldn't get a hold of you, and I knew you wanted.
Since when have you cared about what I want?
Jack cut me off. My eyes widened. That wasn't a question I'd prepared an answer for. I've always cared, I thought. I thought that was obvious. Jack slid his phone across the breakfast table, separating us. The photo of Oliver, seemingly holding me in a twisted embrace, stared back at me.
And you have the balls to say I'm playing games.
Just seeing Oliver with his hands all over me brought back the stench of his rancid deodorant. My cheeks burned as my eyes began to fill. It's not what you think.
Don't even start, Mel.
Jack barked. His harshness was understandable, but it still stung like hell. It reminded me of when I first met him. A bloke full of buried pain with a standoff attitude. Before it pissed me off. Now it just broke my heart.
It's always something. Always some bloody excuse or another. You were too drunk to remember kissing me in Manchester. You were playing along in France. You thought I didn't like you despite the fact I've done nothing but tell you that I do. And when I think we're finally on the same page, you pull out this shit.
I couldn't look up at him. I didn't know what else to say other than the plain and simple truth. I was being assaulted. Saying those four words opened up the floodgates. I began to silently sob. It was as if the realisation and weight of what had happened to me was hitting me all over again.
What?
I finally looked up and through a filter of tears I saw Jack staring at me, his arms now limp by his sides. It was a set-up? Oliver. Saying his name almost made me retch. I could feel his fingers digging into my sides, his breath on my neck. He's just some guy I hooked up with who wanted 30 seconds of fame and decided to attack me while my supposed best friend took pictures. Jack blinked, absorbing it all. Amara took the photos and sold them. She's been selling information for weeks, maybe months. I honestly don't know. I scrunched up my nose. It was taking everything I had not to have a full-on breakdown. I thought she was my friend, Jack. Jack didn't speak, silence consuming us both. I couldn't look at him any longer. It was too painful. I couldn't read his face at all, could only speculate what he was thinking of this entire situation. And most importantly, what he was thinking of me.
What kind of information?
He finally asked. Everything worth anything? I confessed with a sniffle. She's told them all about us. And your granddad. Jack's eyes glanced over all the documents strewn across the breakfast table between us.
Is that why there were photographers at the hospital today?
I nodded. Amara knew you were there. I was on the phone with her just as you came on the ward, about an hour after. The mere attempt at mentioning Arthur's death sent Jack hurtling forward. He grabbed hold of a couple of papers and held them as if tempted to launch them across the kitchen.
So instead of getting this obituary I've been trying to piece together, my granddad instead gets a front page exclusive.
I'm so sorry, Jack. If I'd known Amara was anything like this, I never would have said a word. I had no idea.
No, you never do!
Jack shouted, clearly no longer caring about waking his mum.
You overthink all the time, but not one intelligent, clear thought goes through that head.
He collapsed into the chair closest to him, defeated.
Naive as ever, Mel.
After a moment's silence, Jack finally looked up at me, his own eyes filled with unshed tears.
I'm sorry,
Jack finally whispered.
I'm sorry for what Oliver did to you. I'm sorry for what Amara did to you, and I'm sorry for what I've done to you, because if it wasn't for me, none of this would have ever happened. You'd be so much better off if you'd never met me.
My breath hitched, and I swear I felt my heart begin to tear in two. Don't say that. I took a nervous step towards him, trying to stop the continuous flow of silent tears.
It's true, isn't it?
Jack shrugged.
You wouldn't have gone through any of this. You wouldn't have been put through all that and seen me.
Jack scrunched up his face before wiping one of his cheeks with his sleeve.
Was he okay in the end? Or was he...
Jack finally broke down, his sobs echoing around the room. I tumbled across the kitchen and gripped Jack's face in my hands. I knew this. I recognised this. All the grief and pain in its purest form. The world as he knew it ended. Your granddad was at peace, Jack, I cried along with him, our foreheads touching. I felt his shaking body reverberate through mine, both of us spiralling into our own little world. He left with a squeeze of my hand.
I should have stayed,
Jack wept, burying his wet face into the crook of my neck.
I shouldn't have left him. I should have stayed and been there when he died. He needed me and I deserted him.
I allowed Jack to collapse into me, taking us both to the floor. His entire weight pressed against me, his body rendered useless by the grief. I don't know how long we stayed like that for. Melted into one another. Time seemed to pass effortlessly, as Jack cried till there was absolutely nothing left. Jack made coffee in silence. I hovered by the doorway, unsure if I'd outstayed my welcome. We hadn't spoken a word since we'd helped each other up from the floor. I checked the clock on the oven. It was nearing 7. Jack's mum will be waking up soon, I thought, my eyes flicking up towards the ceiling. Jack had once again seemingly read my mind.
Mum doesn't usually get out of bed till 10. You're fine.
I was settled to see him take 2 mugs out of the cupboard. One purple, one red. As he poured the coffee, our phones seemed to go off in sync. Mine ringing in my back pocket, his lighting up on the table. I checked my phone while he checked his. Ian was calling me.
It's my publicist,
Jack said. Nervously. We both knew what it meant. The article was up.
Do you want me to answer?
He asked, both phones ringing out. I shrugged. This was essentially brand new territory for me. The kitchen went back to silence as both phones went unanswered. A notification came up on my phone. Ian had sent the link through. My thumb hovered over it. How bad could it be? I thought, trying my best to convince myself this would all be fine. Jack was suddenly next to me, holding onto my wrist tightly, stopping me from clicking.
We both know reading that article, and everything that comes with it, isn't good for you.
He breathed deeply.
I can't be the reason you get hurt again.
He looked right into my eyes and I felt my heart drop as I realised what he was saying. This was over. Us, existing in each other's lives, it had well and truly come to an end. I had been right all along. Jack's way of life, his prime time seat in the public eye, came with so much I couldn't handle. As long as Jack was Jack Hart, he wasn't for me, and I wasn't for him. I couldn't support him, and he wouldn't be able to protect me. We both heard the heavy footsteps come stomping down the stairs.
Jacko!
His mum called from the hallway.
Jacko, have you seen this?
The kitchen door flung open, Josie entering like a crack of thunder. Her eyes were too glued to her phone to notice I was even in the room.
Your brother just called, sent over this rubbish about your granddad. I thought you were doing some theatre, heartfelt, lovey-dovey crap. So what the hell is this?
She finally looked up, her phone outstretched towards us both. Her face instantly fell.
Who the hell are you?
I blinked, swallowing the ball of hard saliva in my throat. No one. Jack, I better go. Josie blocked my exit.
You're that girl from the hospital.
She looked back at her phone.
You're this girl.
My eyes couldn't help but scan the bright screen being shoved in my face. Jack, heartbroken over family tragedy and disastrous love life. Every inch of my body started to tremble. The air in the kitchen had become unbearably thick. Couldn't breathe.
What the hell is she doing in your house?
Josie barked, pushing past me and almost launching me into the fridge.
My dad's, your granddad's memory has been made all about her. You know that, right? She needs to leave.
I was just leaving, I admitted, turning for one last look at Jack. I smiled at him, his mum's rants and raves becoming muffled background noise. Bye, Jack. I turned, Jack's parting words.
Good luck with everything, Mel.
Practically following me out of the door.
Chapter 39, 1 year on.
Appreciating life choices, such as quitting the acting industry and instead becoming a successful and happy writer. Ian was by the cloakroom desk, waving two programmes in his hands enthusiastically.
Look at you!
He squealed, taking in my tan, my new dress and my chic wheelie suitcase. He hauled it over the cloakroom desk and passed the boy in the red waistcoat a fiver.
Thought you'd have a lot more luggage. You're here for a month, aren't you?
Save money by only doing carry-on. Plus, you still have our washing machine, don't you?
Yeah, that now makes your clothes smell like cat piss.
Ian jumped giddily before wrapping me in a long, overdue embrace.
Come on then, give us a squeeze. I've missed you.
Yeah, I was out of breath. The walk from Waterloo Station had been an absolute killer in heels. I felt like I had shin splints just from crossing the road before the little man turned red. Not been too shagged up to notice I'd gone.
Pfft,
Callum's good, but he's not that good. Your dad doing all right? Yeah, think he was glad to see the back of me after almost a year.
Doubt that's true.
Ian cupped my face in his hands and pecked a kiss on my cheek.
God, it's just so good to see you. I can't believe how well you look.
He fanned both programmes in my face.
And this is so exciting. Look at this name. See this name?
He ran his fingers underneath the title.
Written by Melissa Bishop.
Ian squealed.
That's you, baby.
He pointed at the top of my head and turned to the queue of people waiting to check in their coats.
This is her, playwright extraordinaire.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats as this evening's performance of Waiting for Monday is about to begin.
So are you excited to see this?
Ian asked, squeezing down the aisle to our seats. I shrugged. playing it as cool as I could manage. Internally, I was spiralling. When the play was finished, it had been chipped off and become someone else's baby. I'd had no involvement in anything from the moment it was bought. No say in the cast, the set, the direction, the sales, not a thing. In a way, it was comforting. If it was terrible, I wouldn't be solely to blame. Nice. Ian placed his arm around the back of my chair and gave me another tight squeeze.
Will you stop looking so terrified, Mel? This is gonna be awesome. Everyone has been raving about it. Tilly even posted how good it was after she came here with Amara last week.
And we both know that's saying something. Amara. I swallowed a hard lump in my throat. I knew it was inevitable that she would be brought up at some point. I just wasn't expecting it to be so soon. I didn't think they'd even know I had a play on. Ian rolled his eyes.
Of course they do! Everyone who follows me does! I'm basically your one-man promotional team at this point.
So, Amara and Tilly? Ian released his arm from around me and began fanning himself with his programme, the theatre becoming increasingly warm with the ever-growing audience.
Oh yeah, BFFs, who'd have thought it, eh?
I cleared my throat, my curiosity getting the better of me. And Amara? Do you still talk to her? Ian rolled his eyes.
What do you think?
I shrugged. I genuinely didn't know. Ian and Amara had been close before it all kicked off. Then I left. How was I supposed to know whether they carried on playing besties while I was away?
Well, I blocked her on pretty much everything, like the day you left. But then she tried reaching out a few times on different accounts and through Tilly and that.
I hope it's okay with you, but I took it upon myself to just tell her to go fuck herself.
And she must have done, because I haven't heard from her since. Anyway, enough about her. We're focusing on you tonight.
The lights began to dim. Ian squeezed my hand, the look on his face wild with delight and pride.
Oh my God, it's starting!
He squealed under his breath as a petite actress walked on the stage with a chair. She placed it centre stage, sat in it, ran her fingers through her hair, and began. I'm not a good person, I confessed to my mum, who no longer has the strength to lift up her head. She smiles softly. I don't think anyone is, she says. Not really. The doctors said she had 3 to 12 months left to live. We got 9 weeks.
Elle.
A voice called from the wings. My eyes shot to stage left as my heart lurched forward. I knew that voice.
Elle, it's freezing out here. Come back inside where it's warm.
An actor, dressed all in black, stepped on stage and I could feel Ian tense in his chair beside me. It was him. Really him. Not on a screen or on the side of a bus or even a fantasy in my mind. It was really him. Jack.
Do you want to leave? Ian leaned into me as soon as the house lights raised for the interval. Because we can.
I'm fine, honestly, I lied, fanning myself with the programme I'd practically scrunched to death.
I didn't know he was in it. I didn't even know he did theatre.
Ian flicked through his programme, completely unaware people were trying to get past.
Tilly didn't say a word. Why the bloody hell didn't she tell me? Do you know what? It might not even be him.
Ian began flicking through his programme. It is. That voice lived in my head all day, every day. Memories played from what felt like a different life on constant repeat.
Yeah, see, it's not him.
Ian almost sounded disappointed.
What?
Ian held up the centrefold. Jack's headshot was smiling back at me. The name beside him? Jack West.
He must have a doppelganger.
Ian sunk back into his chair, satisfied. They don't half look alike. Yeah. But they couldn't be more different, I thought.
I thought we were heading for cocktails,
Ian pouted, throwing a thumb back to the direction of the bar. My arm was linked with his, purely to stop myself from collapsing.
Just walk this way a sec.
What for? I see no cosmos. I see no mojitos or Caribbean dreams.
My case wheel stopped turning and Ian jolted to a halt. The stage door swung open and rosy-cheeked cast members came flurrying out.
Are you wanting your programme signed?
Ian teased, squeezing my arm.
Weirdo. You wrote the damn thing. You should be signing their programmes.
He took my case. You do you, boo. I'll go get us a table and a round of very overpriced drinks and I'll see you in a sec. Okay?
Okay.
Ian trotted off back the way we came while I turned back to the stage door. The cast had all dispersed.
God, this is stupid.
It had been months. Months and months. Jack probably wouldn't even remember me. Or he would, and in some way that made me feel worse. The door opened with a clunk and I held my breath. Dark brunette, flowing hair made my heart sink. Not Jack, just the lead actress of the play, happy with her headphones in and sweatpants on. She smiled awkwardly at me, hesitantly removing a pod from her ear.
You okay there?
I nodded, scrunching the programme in my sweaty palms to a pulp.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for someone.
Yeah? Is it Oscar? He said his girlfriend was coming tonight.
No.
My blood was running so hot I could feel my heartbeat in my ears.
I'm a friend of Jack's.
Oh.
I chewed my cheek so hard I thought it might bleed.
Is he still in there?
The brunette smiled, nodded and put her pod back in her ear.
Yeah, he's always the last one out, so you might be waiting a while.
Minutes felt like hours. Cold breezes were light relief from the ever-rising temperature of my skin. If I wait any longer, I'm either going to freeze to death or melt into a puddle.
Ian must have been drinking himself into a stupor by now.
Clunk. The stage door swung open and Jack came falling through it with his duffel bag tangled around the handle.
Let go, you prick.
Jack's eyes flickered up at me, the colour of his pupils just as green and as rich as I remembered. He finally freed his bag strap, his cheeks notably flushed, then patted down his jeans.
Sorry, this door is temperamental.
Maybe it just has a bit of an aptitude. Jack froze, his eyes fixated on his jeans until his shoulders tensed up and his head rose slowly. His eyes came level with mine. I gave an awkward sort of half wave, my palms now layered with sweat. I'd played this scenario in my head so many times, rehearsed what I would say if by some chance Jack and I ever did meet again. And yet, now we were face to face, I couldn't even croak a hello.
Don't say you've forgotten who I am again.
Jack chuckled nervously, taking a step towards me and outstretching his hand.
It's Jack.
I smiled and shook it. Nice to meet you, Jack.
Special acknowledgements, aka my cheerleaders. My fiancé Jamie and our beautiful daughter. My gorgeous supportive family. Dad got the shout out at the start, but I'll put him here as well. So Dad, again. My sisters, Esther and Zoe. My bonus family, Rachel, Alan, Grace and Rose. My glorious friends, Paige, Reese, Emmy, Mandy, Annie, Jimmy, Chris, Bella, Rack, Rupert, Elise, Martin and Jill. My agents, Oliver, Natalie, Humphrey and Ruby. The doggos, Bumble and Rubble. And of course, Mum. The support squad is endless, I could go on, but fearful of the word count. I'm so very lucky and blessed to have each and every one of you in my life. Thank you for the unwavering support, the pickups when I've been down, and grounding me when I've spiralled up too high. Without you, I wouldn't be here. Cheers.
Melodramatic. Written by Megan Parkinson. Narrated by Megan Parkinson. Produced by Be Here. Cover design by Kayla Coombs. The End.